Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have a show that's dealing again with metaphysics and spirituality. And especially tonight, I am going to also include a lot of science. Of course, we do deal with physics and other elements of science from time to time. So we're going to be talking about the metaphysics and physics of climate change. Now, this has been in the news this week, and I thought it was appropriate to talk about this subject. We've carried the show, so to speak, on occasion in bits and pieces. Tonight, I think I'm going to try to bring it all together so that it makes some sense, because a lot of people are confused because the news is that some scientists, I don't think it's the majority, but I think it's some, who are climatologists and have other varied backgrounds in dealing with climate, have been fudging. They've been adding or subtracting or changing data to make it more compelling that there is, in actuality, global warming. And the interesting thing is that these same scientists appear to not know what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And this is kind of scary, because I think it's their own ignorance, as well as their arrogance, that is propelling them into a position that is pretty harmful for themselves. For any question about people possibly believing them, and then, in addition, for getting to the truth, which hopefully tonight we can do that. Now, if you want to call in, you can, and this is one of those topics that might produce some kind of controversy, which is all right. I don't mind it. And the numbers are right on the screen. You can use those 800 numbers, whether you're in the U.S. or Canada. They're 800 numbers. Outside the country, you got to pay for it. Outside of those two countries, anyway. And let me give you some ideas of some things that have been happening that I have suggested for the past over a dozen years. And that is that the Earth itself is warming up. Now, whether it's from human beings or otherwise, these are my opinions now, but conclusions from facts, which I'm going to give you in a little bit. But whether it's from entirely or somewhat from human beings or from other activities is still somewhat debatable in some circumstances, and just to what degree. My question has always been this: what's the difference? Let's say it's all from CO2 and methane and gas emissions and all these other things. If that's true, okay, so shouldn't we be doing something about it? And let's say it's not because, at least man-made issues of those things, but the Earth's still warming up. And do we want it warmer is the question. And do we want sea levels to rise and other issues to take place? And should we be equally concerned in either case? And my thought is, well, why not? If you're really concerned about the Earth and not about, well, who's doing it, then that's pretty critical. Now, there may be solutions that you need to have some understanding of where it's coming from. But in terms of doing something about it, you know, like saying, well, I think I should pay attention to this. The question is it really happening or not? Now, this is where we get into the scientists in Great Britain and other places that have been fudging. They decided, for right or wrong, apparently, based upon their emails and other factors, and these people represent mostly the United Nations, so that's a really serious problem, because everybody's looking at what the UN is saying and using them as the gold standard of the truth. And unfortunately, the gold standard has been contaminated by these scientists, who I don't believe to be the majority of scientists in the world. But unfortunately, they're the ones that had an impact on some of these UN conclusions. And what they're trying to do, apparently, based upon their own emails, which is weird, talking about indicting yourself, is they didn't think that over the last dozen, maybe up to 15 years, that there was enough compelling evidence to support their claims that global climate change is happening. That's the first thing. And that it's happening, there's an end, because of human-caused events. So they've tried to adjust the data in two different ways. They've added instead of subtracted degrees, Celsius or Fahrenheit. I mean, that's pretty bad stuff. I mean, they changed the data. And then they also did another thing, and that is that they adjusted when temperatures changed to make it look like it was coinciding better with the greenhouse emissions of human beings, us. So, I mean, this is really outrageous, in my opinion. Nothing could harm their positions more so. And they appear to have done this because they believe so strongly that it's true. You know, when you believe in the truth, you don't have to make up a bunch of crazy stuff that inevitably is going to cause the downfall of the very thing you're trying to do. It seems to me like not only is this counterproductive, it's incredibly stupid. Because the way they went about doing it, inevitably, they would get caught. Now, maybe they figure, well, they wouldn't get caught till the year 2025 or something. And by then, who would care anyway? Because they would have achieved their political agendas and whatever else. Maybe protected their jobs. Maybe there was some personal interest in this. That would be even more outrageous. But this is, let's get to some of the things that I think are important to maybe inform all of our listeners about. Now, I've talked about this before, so some of you can say, oh, you said that before. You said that years ago. Some of you may have listened to me at KXAM, and, you know, like 7 years ago, whatever it's. And said, well, you said that then. Yeah, I have. Well, I've been saying it a long time, I know. Okay, here's the point. Temperatures during the last 10, 12 years have been going down. And they should have gone down to some extent up until 2006. Why? Because that was the end of the solar minimus cycle as it should have ended. About every 11 and a quarter, give or take a few months, years, the sun either produces a lot more sunspots, which adds anywhere from 2 to 5% more energy onto our planet. The sunspots, actually, we think of them as cooler, but they actually produce more types of radiation energy that strikes the Earth and actually warms us up. It's weird. You can't go by how much light it's producing. You got to go by the total amount of radiation. The radiation effects are greater because there's more of these expelled particles from the sun during these solar magnetic storms, which are sunspots. It pushes them out towards the Earth, and that heats us up. We get hotter. So the solar maximus period is the period of maximum solar activity. And the solar minimus is when there's either little or no, and no is a big deal, sunspots going on. And it's easy to see. I mean, you can't see them with the naked eye, but you can pretty much see them even with a pair of binoculars. Don't do that because you'll burn your eyeballs out. But with the right filters, you could. So they're not that hard to be able to be seen on the sun. They've been known about for hundreds of years, really a long time. They've known about sunspots. And they didn't know the business about correlation between that and the weather until the last century. That there were people who guessed it a couple of hundred years ago, believe it or not. Some scientists, some famous astronomers. So it's like, you know, people really had this idea for a long time. All right, so solar minimus happened and we went into solar minimus gradually in the latter part of the 1990s. And especially from 95 on is when it started. And everything was hunky-dory. It was going the way it was supposed to go. And it went to an extreme level. Instead of having one or two sunspots here and there, we went to zero. Well, everybody said, well, this is going to be a real strong solar minimus. Okay, it was supposed to change in 2006 and start coming back. Well, it hasn't. As a matter of fact, there's been almost no sunspot activity since 2006. Now, what has happened? Every 3 years, the Earth is cooling about 1 degree Fahrenheit. That's a huge amount. That's like 10 times more than what the CO2 in our atmosphere is presently doomed, regardless of whether it's coming from us or anybody else or anything else. That's a huge amount of energy shift, and it's going on 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and we're going now into the fourth year. We're moving into the fourth year, and there's still no sunspot activity. Virtually none. I mean, there's maybe one little one here or there once in a year or something, but it's like nothing. And so we're virtually at this zero sunspot activity, way past where it was supposed to be. We're going to be supposed to be generating all kinds of sunspot activity, and that means the Earth should be warming up. And instead, we're cooling down to the tune, give or take. Now, these are estimates. Nobody knows for sure that the number I'm giving you is positive, but it's something like a degree Fahrenheit for every 3 years it remains at this level. That's a huge amount. So things are cooling off. Does that mean that we haven't heated up in the meantime? No. If you look at the last 50 years, we really have heated up. And where has the heat gone then? If you go down to the equator, there's only a fraction of a degree that the Earth has changed in the last 20, 25 years. Then it can't be just blamed on the solar minutes effect. No. There's another effect called the Coriolis effect. See, our Earth spins. And when it spins, it produces, you know, you ever watch your toilet? Know what happens when you flush the toilet? That's kind of the Coriolis effect. That's the spin of the Earth represented in the water in the toilet. And what's going on is that the energy tends to move towards the poles, particularly towards the North Pole. You say, well, why the North and not the South? It has to do with the amount of mass. There's actually more mass because there's land underneath the ice at the South Pole. There's nothing underneath the ice at the North Pole, so the energy tends to move towards that direction. And when it moves in that direction, you get all this. You get a minimal amount of deep-seated mass that can absorb it, and most of the mass is absorbed by ice that melts very quickly. And that's our best indication that there are effects. But when we have measured, and these measurements are pretty accurate. They're not the ones that have been fudged by the people in Great Britain, the lame brains in Great Britain who decided that this would be a good thing. But they actually didn't change these numbers. It appears that the pole, the North Pole, is heated up about 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's a huge amount over the last couple decades. That's a huge amount, and the results are equally convincing because the amount of ice that has melted at the North Pole is commensurate with the Fahrenheit or Celsius change in temperature. So we have conclusionary evidence, not just somebody measuring some things here and there, but we can see the effects. And so right now, we don't notice the change in energy on the planet because most of it's going to a place where we don't live. Unless you're, maybe a seal up there or something, you're not going to notice that the temperature has significantly gotten warmer. But people who live in Alaska may have. They may have seen some of their glaciers melting more quickly. And some of the icebergs jumping off of the sides of the cliffs there, falling into the ocean at a much more rapid rate. And those living closer to the North Pole are possibly seeing much thinner ice, which there is. I mean, like two-thirds, three-fourths thinner ice than there was, and patches of just open ocean, which there hasn't been ever in the summertime. I mean, there's even people buying the lanes. The Russians are not buying, but they're declaring certain shipping lanes for summertime use so they can send their ships through the North Pole. And it's a lot cheaper for them to do that. So at any rate, so this is confirmed reality. This is not the nonsense stuff that some of these climatologists have decided to lay upon us and create a bunch of havoc about. So, okay, you could say, wow, this is more serious than I thought because, yeah, there is some real evidence. There is climate change. It's just not affecting us very much because the ice that melts on the ocean isn't on land, so it doesn't really change the sea levels very much. It does change the climate in northern Canada and northern Alaska and maybe northern Siberia, but it doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference for most of the rest of the world, so people aren't really concerned about it. Now, the weird thing about this is, while things are warming up in the north, far north, things are actually getting cooler in the temperate climates like those who are living here in the United States and other parts of the world that live where most of the people do live in temperate climates. You might say, well, why is it getting cooler? Well, let's go back to what I said earlier. Because we're having this extended solar minimus. It's confusing the heck out of everybody. Now, I don't understand why these major climatologists didn't just explain this instead of going and creating a bunch of nonsense numbers to try to support their position. Maybe they figured we just wouldn't understand it. That's probably their arrogance. I don't think this is so hard to understand. The sun is on vacation and decided to cool things off, which is probably going to help the planet for a while. And the bad news is that we still have the poles, and particularly the northern pole compared to the southern, although both are melting. And it's there are indications there is climate change going on about. But it's a weird kind of climate change because some places are getting colder and drier, not wetter. And other places are getting warmer and wetter. This is caused by these changes that I have already explained. These are odd effects. Now, will they continue as they are? Well, I don't know. I don't think so. And now we're going to get into the metaphysics of this whole situation. What I've told you so far is purely physics and climatology. This is not about metaphysics. This is just reporting what's going on. And hopefully this has made some sense for the people who have been trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Now, does this mean that Al Gore exaggerated or said some things that were wrong? Possibly. I don't know if I can blame the guy when he's getting bad information from people who are manufacturing it. I'm not sure that he was involved in manufacturing. If he did, I don't know how, because he's really not a scientist. He's more on the order of an ex-vice president and kind of in the entertainment industry. But at any rate, let's get back to what some of the metaphysical issues are. As I've said before in other shows, it's not coincidental that the sun is in, after 150 years, is going into a major solar minimus period. The last time this took place, it took a couple of decades before it got out of its solar minimus period. Literally, the Thames River in London froze over completely, and people were using it to sell goods on. I mean, they had like a bazaar there in the middle of the spring and fall to sell stuff. It was too cold in wintertime. The temperature all over the planet, remember, we're talking about every 3 years a degree Fahrenheit. So after 21 years, you'd have a 7-degree average drop. That's a huge amount of temperature change in Fahrenheit. All over the world. That's a huge amount. And if you could extend it out to like another 10 years or another 9 years, say, that would drop it, another 3 degrees. It would be up to like 10 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a huge amount. And I think it did go as long as 30 years or longer in one shot, and that was 1859. So, I mean, we're talking, the world was darn cold back then. And, a lot of people probably say, oh, we're going into an ice age, here it comes. And why are these things going on? Because there is a need to slow down the amount of warming. And that need is being responded to by spiritually higher sources. Oh, I know those people who are scientists and never agree with what I just said. But the point is that it makes perfect sense. If you were one of these greater beings and you had some input in how to make change a body that you had, which you could call the sun, and change how much it's having a hiccup here or there in terms of its sunspot, this would be easy to do. Now, you got to be careful because the sun's solar wind, which is created to a large part by the amount of sunspot activity, wipes out and pushes away much more dangerous types of energy that can suddenly hit the planet. Cosmic rays is an example. And it kind of cleans out our solar system. So if you don't have it operating in a cycle that kind of cleans out some of the more serious problems that can come from deep outer space, we could be adversely affected by these extremely high gamma radiation particles to the point where, in X-rays as well, that can possibly do great harm to all life on our planet, not to mention other aspects of other worlds as well, but for right now we're talking about Earth. So you can't allow this thing to go on too long, but you have to balance it out. Maybe there is great concern, and I think there is some, that humans have to take more responsibility for what they are doing and not be doing some of the things that might be heating up the world. And so this gives us about another 5, 10, whatever years they decide, to come to that conclusion on our own and decide to do something about it without rushing and doing something as crazy as cap and trade, which doesn't do anything other than make us poorer and destroy economies. This is not going to solve the problem. Cap and trade is a bad idea, in my opinion. What we need to do is education, and people come to the conclusion that we need to work together and become more inclusive as a world without it being some forceful situation, which is absurd anyway because it removes the economic engines of countries such as the United States, which is what we're going to need a lot of in order to do any kind of climate change because it's going to be expensive at times, and we don't need the expense of artificially inducing it upon ourselves through a cap-and-trade designed structure that literally saps the life out of economies. Now, I'm not going to get into all the economic reasons for that, but it's really bad. It's not good to do what has been suggested in the United States, especially during a severe recession as we're in right now. It could be the part of it that pushes us over the edge. So, and we don't need to do that. It's not going to do anything. And it grows a already dangerously large government that looks kind of tyrannical. So we need to be careful about that too. That's probably the most dangerous part about it. Okay, so moving into what's happening in a metaphysical sense, it seems to me that climate change is really a lesson in learning to be long-range planning and realizing that human beings, now that we can do destruction to the planet, have to take the responsibility of doing constructive things. We have to look at it as being our world and how we want to make it a better world without forcing people to change, but by incentivizing them, not through a stick, but by giving them the benefits and showing them the benefits, both, of what they can achieve through working together. You see, you don't have to tax people. All you got to do is allow them to be more creative, which probably is going to come from lowering taxes, not from raising taxes. But you lower them based in a reward situation. You get rewarded for doing things that are helpful, but you don't get punished for doing things that aren't necessarily helpful. That's a very draconian method. Unfortunately, it's one that we seem to be used to in this world, and it's not very effective. As a matter of fact, it's counterproductive. All right, so these are the metaphysical bases for what I'm going to go on to explain tonight. If there is, and I believe there is, a creator who wants us to ultimately learn and to change, this is an excellent way of doing it. I mean, it's a worldwide crisis, but we have to find the right path. That path is not a path of forced slavery or laws which take all of our rights away. It's a path of us working together. And yes, there's some benefits if we follow the path, but that's not necessarily some, like, goon that's going to come in and say, you're using the wrong kind of, or too much at the wrong time kinds of energy, and we're going to get you. That didn't make any sense. It's kind of a really bad idea. All right, so here we are. We have a system that appears to be working the way it's supposed to be working, and we've got some scientists who want to hide the reality. Now, you can understand why I'm concerned about this, because I would like people to start saying, well, maybe there's a God who wants us to be able to understand that this is our world and we need to be more responsible for it, and we are destroying some parts of it, but we need to do the opposite, and that we are being given an opportunity to do this. And these guys in Great Britain and other places got worried about it, and they figured God didn't know what he was doing because they don't believe in God. Or maybe they do, but they didn't apply the right ideas of God, but most likely they don't believe in God. And so the results were disastrous, because they're trying to hide God from themselves first and from others. So now they believe that God's got, or not God, but they've got to make the difference in the world. They got to help out by lying, by creating a bunch of nonsense numbers to try to prove that there really is global warming, and that we're really in trouble, and we better do something about it right away, and maybe even more so that humans are the responsible parties. This is folly. This is the craziness of our world right now. It's also that third ray effect I talked about. Civilization as a whole is losing the ability to communicate truthfully just about anything. And even in science, which revels in its seeking of truth, now here the great truth seekers are creating a bunch of nonsense that is really upsetting who knows how many people, and is causing so much confusion that I don't know if anyone's ever going to believe what science says about this area. And that's a scary thing, because there's some things that we need to have truth about. Hopefully what I'm saying, people will check out. Please check out what I've said. Don't just believe it, but check it out, because I think it would be helpful if more people had the facts, as they say, as close as they can be determined to be true by their own thinking process, not by me saying it or anybody else. And then we can maybe come together as a collective and say, well, if this is our collective truth as we understand it right now, then let's do this, this, and this to make things better. Now, I'd be really in favor of doing that. I hope you would be, too. Now, when we come back from break, I'm going to talk to you more about some of the things we can do that are really beneficial. I may add a few other little caveats that I didn't cover in any detail during this first part of the show. But hopefully I've already made it sound more rational than what is presently in the news today and in this last few days. Because it's beginning to sound like nobody seems to know what the heck is going on. And that's not true, but certainly a lot of people are moving in that direction, and I'm hoping that that won't be the case for maybe the next year or so, because that would be a real disaster in terms of us wasting time. Okay, we'll be back in about 2 minutes. And we'll continue in this area of investigation.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower, MacFlouer.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the metaphysics and physics of climate change. And I'm going to continue in this joining together of these two different ways of approaching this situation. I thought it would be good, especially in this second segment, to talk about some of the solutions to the problem. The first solution I suggested is that we maybe look at this more spiritually, because right now what's in the news is all about the lies of these scientists, etc. It doesn't completely say that there's no climate change, but it certainly puts a lot of suspicion into not wanting to believe much of what scientists are telling us right now. And I would agree, we shouldn't be listening to people who are lying to us. I mean, they've been proven to be liars. And at this point, I don't know how they're going to get back their reputation or any of that. But that's not our concern. I think the thing one of the things we should be concerned about is the fouling. And that is that the northernmost regions of the planet, as I suggested, are warming up. And there's a lot of evidence to this effect. Now, one of the problems is that not only is the ice melting, that in itself isn't terrible, although it has some ramifications in some circumstances, but the real serious problem is that the permafrost that exists near the Arctic Circle, even south by some considerable amount of this Arctic Circle, is starting to melt and is becoming, we'll call it, normal Earth. But as the permafrost melts, it has locked up all this decaying matter, huge tonnages of billions of tons of decaying matter that normally outgasses methane as it deteriorates. But the freezing of it has prevented it from decaying and stopped its decay and therefore stopped its outpouring of methane. You might say, well, what's so bad about that? Well, you see, methane is about 24 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than is CO2, carbon dioxide. And this is serious because the amount of methane that is locked up in the permafrost, particularly in the northern climes, is more than the total amount of CO2, the effect of the CO2 in our atmosphere right now. So it would be like more than doubling the total CO2 or carbon dioxide levels in our atmosphere if this stuff mostly melts, which it's doing. And that would cause a radical shift in climate. Radical. And I'm talking about in a few years. That's our real scary problem. And remember that Coriolis effect? All that energy is moving up into the northern regions. And as it does, and more methane is released, you have a runaway climate change effect, runaway greenhouse effect, which will heat up the planet and progressively melt more and more. And this is the scariest thing I can think of. It is far more dangerous than how much CO2 we put out next year or the next 5 years, the next 10 years. Right? And even all those coal-fired plants that are being built in China, they're not great for the world. I'm not telling you they are. But they're nothing, not even a fraction, compared to the amount of methane that could be released from the permafrost in the northern parts of the northern hemisphere. We're talking a huge amount. And this is scary. This is so frightening that I'm quite worried about it. And not too many people are talking about it. It's so weird. It's like the climatologists that have been running the show, so to speak, keep wanting us to worry about the tailpipe emissions on our automobiles, and maybe even more so, the coal-fired plants in particularly the United States, which is crazy, because we don't produce, even though half our power comes from coal, we don't produce enough carbon dioxide from it to have much near the effect that even 10% of the methane that's locked in the permafrost with him. So you can see we're going in completely the wrong direction. It's like while the disaster is really going on to the north of us, we're all trying to pass laws that are going to cripple us even further from really doing the work we have to do to change the permafrost problem. And you might say, well, how in the heck are we going to do that? Well, first of all, God, spiritual sources, or whoever you want to believe it, are helping us out by lowering the temperature. Although it lowers the temperature more in the temperate and equatorial regions than proportionately the northernmost regions, the lack of sunspot activity is helping the whole planet cool off. And this at least is buying us maybe a few more years, because this is going to be a major problem. It's not so easy. We have another runaway greenhouse problem in that as the ice melts, more and more of the oceans in the northernmost parts of the northern hemisphere start absorbing heat because they're dark in comparison to ice, and they absorb more sunlight energy. And that causes more heat to be developed in the northern regions and even faster response of the permafrost melting. I hope you follow that. I'm trying to make it simple. But there are some connections. You've got to connect the dots in your mind. You're not going to be able to follow what I'm saying. So this is a dangerous, dangerous problem. Now, the group that I'm a member of came up with a semi-solution for it. And that was to hybrid a particular kind of plant, we'll call it. It's really an algae, you can call it. It's a phytoplankton. And that phytoplankton is, it isn't exactly an algae, but it's like that. And what it does is it grows in cold water, but it can't grow on ice, and it can't grow under ice for the most part. It needs some sunlight. And it's mostly brown-green, but there's one or two alleles, which is a part of like a gene, that if we were to change it, we can make it almost pearl white. We can make it really white. And if we change it to be white instead of brown-green, we can engineer this phytoplankton to do this, the result would be that it would reflect wherever the ice melted away, it would reflect the sunlight back out into space because it was white instead of the ocean, which is, as far as sunlight is concerned, pretty much dark. And we would cool off the northern regions and reverse some of the permafrost harm and also reverse some of the ice. And it would be self-regulating because these phytoplankton can't grow where there is ice, so as they grow, they cool it down, more ice comes about, and it limits their growth. So they can't take over the whole oceans or something, which they wouldn't be able to do anyway. And of course, we would have to perform experiments and make absolutely certain that our genetic changes don't do something goofy to them. Now, for some people, they might say, well, that's science, and it could be bad for us. Well, it could be, but it would be a lot worse, believe me, if all that permafrost up there turns into methane and we're in big trouble. So this is a big thing. This is a huge thing. And it's a simple solution. We actually sent this into Google with their 10-100 project. Those people flaked out. They didn't do it. They didn't do what they were said they were going to do, and they completely reneged on the entire project. So, unfortunately, it didn't get considered because nobody's project got considered. They came up with a kind of Obama plan or something. It was the craziest thing I've seen of trying to lump everything together, some kind of socially engineered idea, instead of coming up with a solution for real problems. Unbelievable. But that's another show and another subject. For right now, we need to do something about this. I'm throwing out one solution. There are several more. I don't have time tonight to go through every one of these inventions that we've thought of, and others have as well. But I'm trying to show you that there's things that we can do. How long would it take us to genetically engineer this plant? About 1 year. No kidding. And that's at our present level of technology. We could change the alleles in 1 year. That's the estimate. And it would be, we'd be able to have this plant within 2 years growing all over some of the northern waters, cooling things off, and giving us more time to further solve the problem, further balance out the energy in the plant. Then we might gain 10 or 20 years to deal with our CO2 emissions from all the plants, and from, I'm talking about the energy plants, and from all the tailpipe emissions and every other place that we're getting CO2 from. You see how much more sensible it is when you know what you're looking at and what your real problem is. If we continue down the road we're going, we're headed for disaster, and we won't even know what hit us. One day we're going to wake up, we're going to hear that suddenly the planet's going off in la-la land, and the conveyor system, which is the most dangerous thing, in the oceans is shutting down. Well, that could lead to the exact opposite of what we think. All of the global heating, especially when it happens in the northern hemisphere, can lead to a total reversal, and without the conveyor system and the oceans moving heat from the tropics up into the cooler waters and then back down again because of salt changes in the ocean, the results could be a ice age. Believe it or not, within 18 months, if we hit a critical level and stop the conveyor system for just a year and a half, we can move into an ice age. It's unbelievable. And you can't stop it once you start it, because it has all these feedback systems to it. It would be very difficult. Everybody says, well, why don't we just get out and burn all our coal, and that will we'll raise the atmosphere to tremendous levels, and then we'll really be working on it, right? And isn't this business in the methane, wouldn't that counter it as well and everything else? Actually, this is the bizarre part about it. Once you stop the conveyor system, even with all the methane that is trapped in the Arctic, it would not be sufficient. This has been calculated by a number of different physicists. It would not be sufficient to stop the freezing. The conveyor system is so effective in moving heat from one side of the planet to the other that ultimately, even all that methane, even everything, all our crazy, power plants and everything else would not be sufficient to stop a coming ice age if we stop the conveyor system by changing the salt levels. We dilute the salt in the ocean, and the water doesn't fall from the top to the bottom. It's a whole system. And what takes place is, you then stop this conveyor system. And you say, well, why does the water become desalinated? And that's because we're adding so much fresh water from all that ice I was talking about melting. The probable trigger for it is going to be the Greenland ice shelf literally melting away because of the methane causing a heating up in that general area. Besides, it'll be closer to it than other waters, but a heating up of the planet. And within a few years, the ice in Greenland melts, and then that is sufficient, and it's in the right location, unfortunately, as well, as it makes it even worse, of destroying the Atlantic conveyor system, and that's the end of it. We end up going into an ice age, as I said, within 18 months. Wow. Okay. All right. So that's a big deal. The algae, or called phytoplankton, I want to use the correct word, the phytoplankton could be our big ticket, the way to solve, at least in a temporary way, the problem. What else can we do? What other kinds of things would be helpful if we were really serious about this? Well, if things really get nasty, it is possible to literally start bulldozing snow from the northern climates down to some of the southern ones, keeping the areas more frozen for longer periods during the year. You might say, well, that sounds like a losing proposition. Well, it is kind of, but you can offset some of the effect, and you might be able to get somewhere with it. It would be enormously expensive. Think about it. And then you'd be using the bulldozers would probably be sending out all the CO2, so I don't know how much we'll benefit from it. There's a lot of other kinds of suggestions that have been made. Some people suggest using white tarps over the permafrost. That might reflect some of the heat energy back into the space, and we might keep it cooler. Yes, that might work, actually. Maybe paint. Just paint the ground white. Maybe that would work. There's a lot of possibilities. Maybe whitewash. Something to keep it cooler, and early on it might work. If you wait too long, it won't have any effect on it because the permafrost will be too belted and it's much harder to refreeze it. So we would have a bigger problem then. But there are a lot of things that we have to start looking at in terms of how to solve the more serious problems that we're looking at. Remember, the industrialization issues, which are problems, are really decade-long problems. They're not things that are going to cause more immediate problems. And those immediate issues are what I'm talking about tonight. Hopefully this is making some sense to people. And remember, we have to have a strong world economy if we're going to deal with how to change our lifestyle in ways that is productive without being destructive to our civilization. I mean, we don't all go back to living in caves, or if we ever did live in caves, or living in huts or something with no energy, no electricity, because we're going to just try to save the world. I don't think that most people are going to consider that a real good substitute, real good solution. And I don't think it's the path that we're supposed to be on. I think that humans are here to develop a civilization, but one that isn't destructive to the lower kingdoms, and it is constructive to the planet we live on. So far, we haven't been able to find that, and we are in control of the situation. From about 1975 on, we've been in control of what's going on at increasing rates every year, and the outcome of the whole planet is based upon us now. It's not based upon the conglomerate of lower life. It's based upon us. We're controlling all the life in the world. And so we have to choose to do something that will be beneficial, that will be very helpful, hopefully. What else can we do? Well, the first thing is, all of you who are listening to me, how about telling your friends, neighbors, etc., hey, this guy's show is on the, you know, the archive site of the station, you know, at bbs.com. And you can also go to agelesswisdom.com and listen to the show. And so you have that opportunity. And if you can, and you can repeat some of the things that I've explained with some accuracy, you can then just act as a conduit and say, this is what I understood. And it'd be even better if you look it up yourself to make sure what I'm saying is accurate. And get other people to find out, because one of the problems we have right now is there's communication issues. It's hard to get the stuff out there. There's so much white noise all around us in every other area. It's hard to hear what's going on. And a lot of people are hearing misinformation at this very moment. So try to communicate. Try to get others to hear what you believe to be the truth. If you believe what I'm saying is mostly or all the truth, then let people know about it. And say, hey, this is a serious thing. This guy's got some great ideas, and it's not that complicated. We have a chance to make a difference now. Now, whether they want to believe that there's a spirit behind this and that there's God's thought is really evolved in what's happening, that's okay. If they're open to that, that's even better. If they're not, you don't have to bring it up. Of course, they'll hear it on me talk about it, but that's okay. They can say, well, I don't like that part of what he's saying, but I like everything else. That's all right. So I don't mind. The point here is that they'll, of course, have a bigger, a greater, more complete picture if they were to include that, because I think that explains a lot better what is taking place. What else can we do? Well, we can start educating our children about this in a way that makes sense, because I don't believe they're getting the truth in school. If you think the news is confusing, could you imagine what teachers are teaching our kids? Mostly wrong stuff. They're mostly teaching kids that the real climate problem is what humans are doing in terms of industrialization, and they're not looking at the real issues. They are failing to see the real dangers, and they're coming up with false solutions. All we have to do is make cars less polluting. All we have to do is switch from coal to solar, except solar won't produce enough power to even do a tenth, even a twentieth of what the coal power plants do, even if we had all the solar we could possibly produce. And that includes wind. It's just not going to make up for the coal we're doing. So this is the kind of thing that, unfortunately, I believe is what children are getting. And the children of today are our future scientists of tomorrow. And hopefully, if they're indoctrinated by their younger years, they may be the scientists of tomorrow who continue to advocate the lies that we're hearing. We don't want that. We want our children to be seeking truth, to be fighting to learn the truth, and to be thinkers themselves. And I don't see that going on in most of education. So be good to get your children together and listen to what I'm saying and talk about it. And let's get them out there researching, looking for the information that I'm giving out to see how accurate it is. Let them check me out. Give them that assignment. That would be a wonderful thing to do. So I hope that this makes some sense. I'm running out of time, as usual. So I want to mention to you that if you haven't gotten it yet, haven't tried it, try Ideal Soul Sorption Resveratrol. You can get it at foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. Stuff's on sale. It's great. It really works. Works as good or better on your animals, your pets, such as your dogs and cats. We have a formula for that, or they have a formula for that. It's not exactly me, but it's the sort of people I'm associated with. And also, there's a formula for people, and they're different formulas, but they work fantastic. What do? They make you feel and look younger, and likely you're going to live a lot longer and be healthier in the process, which probably is more important than the overall life expectancy, as well as much as it is how you live your life. And if you want to get some soul balance, get that from Life Balance Association. You can give them a gift of $160. They'll send you a bottle and another whole bunch of capsules, from the 48 capsules. So you get a total of, I think it's 173 capsules or tablets and capsules. You use this stuff, and it makes a huge difference in how your wellness is going to be, especially in this time with the flu and pneumonia associated with it that's going around and everything else that's happening. This is something you really want to seriously look at. 602-472-5127, or you can call that 800 number and get to the other people as well. But I'll say it one more time, 602-472-5127. Give them a shot. Give them a call. And we're going to be running out of time here. I don't know when Mimi's going to be teaching in Borders, but whenever she is, you can go see her. It'll be one of these Mondays that's coming up. And she said something in the background. The third Monday of the month. It's very simple. Remember the third Monday of the month? She'll be over at Borders in Mesa. And she'll be teaching. Somebody asked me just a couple days ago, she's still teaching there? The answer is absolutely, and you can go to hear her and see her. And she does a great job teaching. And that's at 7 p.m. on the third Monday of each month. Go check her out. Okay, we are out of time for right now. Hopefully this has made some sense. It's made sense to me. I hope it's made sense to you. Re-listen to the show if you have missed some of the things. Of course, you can always contact me or by either email at thoughts@whylifeis.com, or you can call. I am available. Until next time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.